Hi, this is Dan Rusinowski, the voice of the San Jose Sharks. You're listening to Bay Area Sports Wrap with Lowell, Marco, and Ryan.
The four-man rush, Purdy. Nothing downfield. Smith-Williams was chasing. Purdy gets out of there. Looking deep, back in the end zone. He's got Ayuk for the touchdown.
Welcome. Happy New Year, everybody. Alongside Ryan Leung, I'm Marco Lukolovich, and welcome to Bay Area Sports Wrap. It's time to do our end of the year 2023 year in review, as well as getting 2024 ready as well. And first of all, Ryan, I'd like to start off by talking some NFL football, and particularly the San Francisco 49ers, who went out to our nation's capital and had a nice rebound game, beating the Washington Commanders 27-10 after getting dominated by the Baltimore Ravens just 6 days earlier and on Monday Night Football. And that was also a big rebound game for Brock Purdy, who came in there, threw a couple of touchdowns, had a nice completion percentage. And, you know, this team looks like the old 49ers. The only thing that was maybe a negative that came out of this game was that running back Christian McCaffrey, who I believe is the true MVP of the NFL, came out of there with a little bit of a calf issue. I guess it's strained on him. And, you know, I think if worst came to worst, if, you know, that had been like the NFC Championship game, he probably would have played the entire game. But the fact that, you know, again, it was Washington, they had a comfortable lead. I think Kyle Shanahan was just like, look, let's just take him off for now and let him rest because we caught this game in hand. And so, but other than that, though, the defense was back to being the defense. They had back-to-back interceptions on those two possessions by Washington in the second half, and pretty much sealed the game for them. And it was just a really overall great victory by the Niners, who, thank you to the Arizona Cardinals, and now the Niners are the number one seed in the NFC. They clinched it, and now the road to the Super Bowl goes through Santa Clara.
All right. First of all, Marco, Happy New Year to you. And I was going to say, didn't we just do something like this the other day? Little technical glitch on my part, but it's okay. Happy to talk sports with you, Marco, anytime. Great that the Niners were able to get that number one seed. And as we mentioned, you know, yesterday, Apollo Creed wins, right?
That's
because
right.
Arizona this time played the role of they played the role of Rocky, but of course we always equate Rocky with Philadelphia. So that was great to see the Cardinals beat Philly on their turf at Lincoln Financial Field. A lot of Eagles fans, you bet, were pissed off. In fact, I think I've seen some stuff on Instagram, fans basically saying, "What the F are you guys doing?" Right? I mean, the team. How do you? I think you mentioned to me, I think they outscored them. Was it like 29-10? I think was the margin of comeback for the Cardinals.
Right. And
just an embarrassment for the Eagles, but who cares about them, right? I mean, exactly. I mean, the Niners. I give them credit. They didn't lie. They were totally honest about the fact that they were more than happy that Arizona was able to help them in their cause to get that number one seed. And that's just awesome. The Niners just need that so badly. I mean, football, as you know, Marco, playing in high school, is the most physical sport there is. It's so demanding. And the fact that now the regular season is 17 games and you get the one bye week and that's it. And now the playoffs are really tough. It used to be, I think before they changed it, a lot of teams got a bye week. Now you can only get it if you're the number one seed and everybody else has to play.
Right.
So that's just grueling. I mean, it really is. And so for the Niners to get this week off that they're going to be able to rest their bodies, and also now playing a Rams game, even though the implications are such that it means something for the Rams' playoff chances, this game is completely meaningless for the Niners. They could almost play this game like a preseason game. You know, Kyle Shanahan could sort of like kind of build the roster the way he wants. He can, you know, try to give some guys rest. But the bottom line is there's not this overwhelming pressure that they have to win this game.
Yeah, exactly. And you can look at it from a standpoint that, you know, they definitely should give guys like Christian McCaffrey an extra week of rest so that he has 2 weeks to make sure that calf is 100% going in January 20th, 21st, whenever they host that divisional game. And you think that, you know, Kyle Shanahan is smart. Sometimes he's proven he is. Sometimes he's proven he isn't. But if he is smart in this situation, he maybe gives the starters just the first half of play. As you mentioned, this game is absolutely meaningless. they can't go up. They can't go down. This is it. They're the number one seed. And yeah, of course, you know, the Rams are fighting for their playoff lives. They're going to be, you know, going out for all four quarters, all four quarters. And, you know, who cares? The Niners won't have to worry about them at all. If anything, probably until if they make it past the wild card round, if they make it into the wild card, that they would face them probably in the divisional. So, well, there will be 100%. You know, and rested. So I look at it that if Shanahan should just do something like that, just maybe give his starters, like, you know, Debo and Brock and all those guys, just give them the five first half some reps. So, you know, they stay sharp. You don't want to have them get rusty, right? And then second half, throwing Darnold, throwing Elijah Mitchell, throwing, you know, whoever, Ronnie Bell. I don't know, Juwan Jennings is going to be back or not. He's still in the concussion protocol as of today. Reading Shanahan's press conference earlier, he had this afternoon. So, you know, Eric Armstead, I know they said he's still got to, you know, rest his leg injury that he has. So when you look at the situation now, it really has come at a perfect time for the 49ers in that they are able to rest those guys and not have to rush bringing any of the injured guys who are currently, you know, not playing, try to for this game against the Rams, which again doesn't mean anything. And if they happen to lose, so be it. So this is, I think, what the Niners have wanted, or at least that was their goal, I think, going into the season, was to get that number one seed. Because you know, it used to be where the playoffs, the first two seeds got the bye. That's no longer the case since they added another wild card, the third wild card. And you mentioned the 17-week season. So yeah, you know, at this time of the year, everyone is banged up. Okay. I don't care how great of a conditioned athlete you are banged up, because again, playing football, and I only played 11 games. By the time we got to, you know, November, and I was sore everywhere. I had bruises everywhere. So I know how these guys feel as far as getting this late into the season and what this week of rest will do for them.
Yeah, I was actually going to tell you, Marco, that apparently by virtue of the Steelers beating the Seahawks on Sunday, the Rams clinched the playoff spot. So my question to you is, if the Rams were to win, does it change their seeding much? I'm not really sure if that really does anything at this point.
I don't believe it does, because you have, what, Dallas or Philly, that's going to be the fifth seed, right? And then I don't have the standings in front of me, but are the Rams sixth then? Because I don't think they can, unless the Dallas happens to lose, then they maybe can get the fifth spot, but yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to really improve this, because either way, they're going to be on the road, no matter whether they finish fifth, sixth, or seventh, right? So, I still think, though, that the Rams are going to want to, you know, despite already clinching their spot to the playoffs, they're going to want to go in all cylinders flying, because, you know, they don't get that week off, right? So, I think for them, too, maybe McVay only does his starters, you know, Stafford and Williams and Puka and all those guys for one half. We'll see. That's really going to be interesting to see what happens in that second half of that game coming in this Sunday. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I did not know that going into this. So the fact that now both teams are in the playoffs and the Niners can't really advance farther, and I don't even think neither can the Rams. And again, I don't think it really matters whether they get, like I said, fifth through seven, it's not going to matter. So, but still, we'll see what happens in that second half of that game. It'll be interesting to see what both coaches try to do there.
Yeah, actually, right now, I was looking at it through our friends at NFL.com. The Rams are sixth right now, and they are second in the NFC, second in the division behind the Niners, but that's where they stand right now. Yep.
And a big win by the Colts. The Raiders have been eliminated from playoff contention. The Colts will have a chance next week to win the division and also get in as a wild card. A lot to play for. Week 18, right back here in Indy against the Houston Texans.
I think it's time to do an autopsy for the Las Vegas Raiders. They were officially eliminated on Sunday when they lost to the Indianapolis Colts 23-20. They were one of those teams that was above them, that they were chasing, and they came out and just were dominated, I thought, by Indianapolis' defense. You know, I know they got that late touchdown with 30 seconds left, which really was meaningless because they didn't get the onside kick. But, you know, Antonio Pierce, I think, did what he did, what he could do, excuse me, in order to get this team playing competitive again. But whether he's the head coach going forward, who knows? You know, and some people have said that he cemented his spot with the Christmas Day win over the Kansas City Chiefs over there at the Geha Stadium, whatever how it's pronounced, at Arrowhead.
Yeah.
And, you know, which was a great victory. I mean, really, that's the best, you know, Christmas present I think the Raiders have ever given me on a Christmas Day. So the fact that they made Patrick Mahomes and, you know, Mr. Taylor Swift their cry and whine and throw helmets and tantrums that entire day, just, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better Christmas present.
No, I agree. I think it's, you know, the way I see it with the Raiders to me are the football equivalent of the movie Groundhog Day. Mm. It's basically the same thing every year. They don't have a good year. They don't have a bad year. I mean, right now they're looking at either 7-10 season or they'll finish 8-9, right? Which is, you know, hey, let's be honest, it's mediocrity. Okay. And that's the Raiders' new slogan. I mean, and again, love the great Al Davis, may he rest in peace, but all his famous slogans, whether it's commitment to excellence or pride and poise and, you know, the Raider way, just win, baby. None of those things are happening for the Raiders anymore. You know, they've really become a mediocre franchise over the last 2 decades. And it's really, really sad. I mean, I remember when I started covering the Raiders in the late 90s, early 2000s, every year they were going to the playoffs. It was great. I mean, I could really see why people didn't like the Raiders. People hated the Raiders and they hated Raider fans. Yeah. Now, the way I see it, some people still talk about that way about the Raiders, but for the most part, Raider fans are kind of laughed at. They're like the Chicago Cubs of the National Football League. They're lovable losers. They really are. They just happen to be lovable losers that wear face paint and they look tough, right? But as you know, a lot of Raider fans are the most respectable people out there, the doctors and lawyers and you know, the businessmen, but they just look crazy on Sundays. And that whole image is also being eschewed because of how they play in Vegas now, that a lot of the Raider mystique is gone. Okay, they play in a real nice, shiny stadium that looks like a Rumba vacuum cleaner, or the Death Star, as you want to call it. Right. But there's no magic at all to playing at Allegiant Stadium. It just isn't. There's nothing about any opponent. The opponents don't fear going into that stadium. They don't worry about the fans. There's no black hole there. I mean, it's just a nice stadium, and it's just really sad that I've seen the Raiders franchise just kind of diminish into what it's become. Now, granted, the marketing's better than ever, right? I see you're wearing a Raiders cap and. I've got, you know, a lot of Raiders stuff that, you know, it's been great that they've had this great image, but it just frustrates me so much that they just cannot become this great franchise that people know them for being what they once were.
Yeah. And it's sad because, like you said, you know, and I've been there now covering a few games over these last 2 years, and there is no home field advantage there. Unless they're playing one of the LA teams, whether it's the Chargers or the Rams, that's the only time you're going to have Raider fans outnumber the visiting team fans. And, you know, I mean, come on, there's an actual club on the north side of the stadium, you know, where people can actually dance and party and drink and what have you, and not even care that there's a football game going. And again, this is what Mark Davis, you know, wanted, whether he, you know, thought he was, this is what he was going to get as far as the shiny new place. Well, when you build something like this in a tourist town where, you know, everyone's coming from everywhere to just to get away and be in Sin City, they're going to want to come and see their team play, right? So you have Raider fans that don't have any kind of really strong base in Vegas. You got them coming from the Bay Area, you got them coming from Los Angeles, but there's no really strong fan base in Las Vegas. And so it's not like, you know, they were an expansion team like the way with the Golden Knights were able to build and, you know, get a fan base there. And that, you know, we've both been to T-Mobile Arena and see how they've marketed and made the Golden Knights the product there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with the Raiders, they're not really doing that. They're just saying, well, hey, here's our fancy new barn.
Yeah.
And you get it to where it's like 70% visiting fans to Raider fans. And again, there's no home field advantage. There's no true atmosphere there. That's, like you said, a black hole. And, you know, where teams come in there intimidated to play. They don't come in there intimidated to play. They come in there knowing that they're going to have their own home field advantage with their fans cheering for them. So, That's just it's again. That's what it is, and that's the way it's going to be for quite a while. You know, and who knows if that, you know, the Raiders are ever, we're going to get a strong fan base straight out of Vegas. I don't see that happening, just because they never were their team. They've always been either Oakland or LA.
Yep, I think this too. You mentioned Antonio Pierce. I mean, he did an okay job. He certainly knows the Raider history, but he didn't impress me enough. I mean, I'm not against Mark Davis going out and trying to find another coach so he can add to the $100 million he already owes to John Gruden and to Josh McDaniels, and also the other GMs that he owes too, right? Because he owes money. Who was the GM that was under McDaniels?
It was David Ziegler.
Yeah. So money owed to him. I mean, come on, you know, hey, making it rain, right? I mean, that's what Mark Davis is doing. I'm going to make it rain for all these coaches. And I really think, you know, if he wants to go out and try to pursue a big name, I still think Jim Harbaugh's on the table. I really do. I think Jim Harbaugh's worn out his welcome as he did with the 49ers, and I think he's wearing it out of Michigan. You know, of course, you know, he got to the Rose Bowl, and they're playing for a possibility for the national championship. But I don't think people are happy with Harbaugh. I think they're kind of tired of his act, and he is a very strange person. I mean, the years I covered him with the Niners, he was an enigma, to put it mildly. And I don't think he's the friendliest guy. I've spoken to people within the Niners organization who hated his guts. They didn't like the guy. He was not very friendly, and he just did things kind of whatever his way. And I don't think he's exactly at all like his brother John. I think John's a much more stable person, which is probably why, you know, he's been so successful in Baltimore all the years he's been coaching them. So, yeah, I think the Raiders should go out and get another coach. I really do. Of course, if they didn't screw it up and let go of Rich Bisaccia and Jack Del Rio before him, the Raiders wouldn't have this problem. But they're always trying to find a way to fix something that ain't broke.
Right. And then, speaking of Harbaugh, Alabama just scored a touchdown. So they're up now 17-13 with 14:30 left in the fourth quarter down there in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl for the semifinal college football playoff. And so if they were to lose this game, you know, then he really will not fulfill what he really wanted to do and bring a national championship to Michigan. But like you said, like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Davis goes out and tries to throw him another $100 million like he did with Chucky. And I know he didn't give that much to McDaniels, but just because he's such a, you know, big name, and he does have Raider ties, you know, that's where he got his original coaching stint, was with the Oakland Raiders, and so in the early 2000s. And so you look at it from that standpoint that, you know, if he does bring him in, then, you know, the Raiders are going to need another quarterback. You know, who knows? I see another complete roster where it's just an upheaval, right? Whoever coaches the Raiders, whoever's the next coach, and if it's not Antonio Pierce, then you know they're going to want to bring in their own people, their own players, right? And that's what Josh McDaniels did, you know, bringing in Jimmy G, you know, wanted to make it the Patriot way, the Raider way. And obviously he failed doing that. And that's why he got fired midseason. And so, you know, and there's, again, there's talks that they're going to dump Jimmy G after the season because, you know, they don't believe him as a starter. And I'm telling you, that's got to be one of the, other than Russell Wilson's robbery for what he did with Denver, I think Jimmy G's robbery of the Raiders is second to that, as far as going in there and stealing paychecks and not even having to play. So good for him, man. I love Jimmy G. So congrats to him.
Yeah, I think it's just funny though how Jarrett Stidham has twice become the backup, right? I mean, or the guy to supplant somebody. First, he did it with Derek Carr, and now he did it with Russell Wilson, right? Yeah. Kind of ironic there, but yeah, Jimmy G didn't impress me. I know, and obviously, I'm not a guy who's going to swoon over his looks, even though he is a good looking guy. I'm comfortable enough with my sexuality to say that he's a good looking man, yes. But come on, win some football games. That's what you're there for, right? And he wasn't doing enough of that. So to get benched as a Raider quarterback, as I mentioned this analogy before, it's like back in the 90s when the Detroit Tigers had no pitching. And you wouldn't want one of their starting pitchers because all they would do is give up home run balls in Tiger Stadium, which, by the way, was a place that you want to see some home runs hit. You watch baseball games at Tiger Stadium. Those balls were getting hit all over the place.
Right.
Getting hit in left field, over the left field roof, or getting hit off the light towers. Anyway, but that's the example I draw. And I think Jimmy G was not – he just, you know, he's one of those guys that I think he had a lot of ability, but he just didn't quite put it all together. And he reminded me a lot of Jeff Garcia. He had a lot of the happy feet going, you know, didn't really have a good stable presence in the pocket. And when he did scramble to get runs, he did have exhibited very poor judgment. That time he got hurt in Minnesota because he tried to fight for one extra yard. Okay, I'm going to fight for one extra yard and then miss the rest of the season.
Right.
I mean, come on, man, use your head. You know, use your brain a little bit. And Brock Purdy doesn't exhibit any of that stuff. I mean, he's – he's a very solid quarterback. And I think 4 years of playing at Iowa State was a big reason for that. Yeah. You know, playing those extra years, it goes to show you how much you develop as a quarterback. I'm still mind-boggled. How the heck did he still become the last pick in the draft? I still can't figure that out.
Yeah, that is a mind-boggling question. I think we're going to have now for a while.
Yeah.
You know, being Mr. Irrelevant with the career he had over at Iowa State. And, you know, he put himself to be a really good quarterback in college. So why the scouts, you know, didn't value him going in? I don't know if he had a bad combine,
yeah.
You know, which is just, you know, I don't even know why they have that. To tell you the truth, I mean, like, these guys should just do have a pro day and that's it. You know, they shouldn't have to, you know, measure them out like cattle. You know, that's basically
what
mm-hmm. So who knows? But like, you know, you got 3,100 teams that are kicking themselves in the ass right now, going, God, we should have took Brock Purdy. I can mention at least 10 teams right now that wish they had Brock Purdy, not the current quarterback. So that's just the way it happens, you know.
And even if Brock Purdy, I mean, not that this is going to happen, but let's just say he never throws another pass again. He is now the single season passing leader for the 49ers franchise. That's right. Yeah. Better than Joe Montana, better than Steve Young, better than John Brody, better than Y.A. Tittle. Okay, that's saying something. I mean, I just mentioned four great quarterbacks right there, all in the Hall of Fame, right? I guess Brody's not, but the other guys are. Yeah. Brody in the Hall of Fame too. Anyway, so all those guys are great quarterbacks, and Brock Purdy is number one on the list.
Right.
It's
funny you mentioned, you know, early Jeff Garcia. Guess who he passed to become number one in Niners all-time history in single season with 4,280 yards? Jeff Garcia,
yeah.
4,000, what was it, 280, whatever, in the year 2000. In fact, that was the first year of Terrell Owens, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. Terrell Owens had already been on the Niners because he was there for the catch too, which I remember seeing because back in those days, they gave us field access, and I was standing right on the other side of the end zone
watching
him get crushed by three defenders. Three Packers basically like sandwiched him, and he held onto the football.
That's right. That's right. 2000 was the last year Jerry Rice was in town for the Niners.
Yeah, and that was Jerry Rice's and Jerry Rice's last game is when T.O. set the record with 20 catches for 283 yards. I was at that game too, so
okay.
I've seen some great games, Marco. It's been a lot of fun covering sports.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's I think that's what my brain was going there with that. But yeah, so you know, the Niners, you got the tail of two franchises. Niners are being a Super Bowl contender, they're gonna continue to be one with that defense, with Christian McCaffrey, with Brock Purdy, and you got the Las Vegas Raiders who are just gonna, you know, again, have another upheaval roster wise, coach wise, general manager wise. There really needs to be one owner wise, you know.
Yeah. I mean, all the Raiders, you know what the Raiders keep doing, Marco, for lack of a better analogy? It's like they're playing a video game and they keep hitting the reset button.
Right.
It's like you're doing some kind of factory reset. I mean, all you're doing is hitting the reset button. You're starting all over again. I mean, you're starting from scratch, and that's all the Raiders do every single year. It's like, what? I mean, and again, I really give it hands down to the diehard Raider fans, from the ones that I know that Baker Raiderette being one of them and her boyfriend, they're both big Raider fans. They post stuff constantly on Instagram, and they are diehards. They go to like 90% of the games. Yeah. And I mean, they go to, I think, every home game, and they go to select road games.
Right. So,
I mean, that's some dedication and money.
I was going to say that they're spending a lot of
money. Yeah. You know, what are they getting out of it? You know, I feel bad for them. I really do. Cause like, there's a lot of dedicated Raider fans out there that spend their hard earned money, and they're giving it to Mark Davis, who, for God's sake, can that guy get a real haircut, for Christ's sake? You know, it's like, man, what's up with that guy? His styling is the worst. I've never seen anybody with a worse sense of style than Mark Davis.
Yeah, you know, that whole bull haircut, like, wow. And he actually pays someone to do that for him. That's what blows me away.
I
can do that myself.
I mean, you know, I mean, seriously, he looks worse than Harry Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber. He makes Mo from the Three Stooges look like Paul Mitchell.
Yeah, I agree.
Same thing. On a screen. Doncic has her center. Gets it shoot, and Green lasers in a three. So Dallas is getting whatever they want offensively right now.
Hey, should we move on to the Warriors, I guess, at this point?
Yeah, let's go and segue on to the Golden State Warriors, who had a rough stretch these last few games. You know, I was at the Thursday game against Miami, where they just looked lifeless, couldn't match the intensity of the Miami Heat, who were missing four of their main starters, you know, including Jimmy Butler. And the way they came out there and just took it to the Warriors and you know, pretty much smacked him upside the head. And as far as getting to every like loose ball, every 50-50 ball, you know, Miami Heat are just a team right now. They're in the smack top of the Eastern Conference. I think they're at least at that time they were 19-12. And you know, you had Bam Adebayo in there. You had, you know, these young guys like, you know, Nikola Jovic, who I talked to after the game that night and was not really a nice guy. And but you know, I try to ask him and you know, Eric Spoelstra, you know, that could you guys sense the lack of intensity that the Warriors, you know, didn't have that game? And you know, of course, they all did the politically correct answer by saying, oh, no. You know, that's a team that they're so dangerous at any time. And, you know, Curry can go off, Clay can go off, blah, blah, blah. But they weren't, you know.
Yeah.
And so, and then you're at Saturday's game. Mm-hmm. And saw how Dallas just did whatever they wanted. They were driving in. They were hitting threes. Those were uncontested threes from what I watched. You know, I was watching it a little bit here and there. But, you know, I was just like, you know, the defense is just not there. And I know GB2 came back, but, you know, he's limited right now. He's not 100%. And they're really missing Draymond Green. You know, I'm sorry, because Draymond Green, you know, for what he is and all shenanigans, he sets the tone, especially defensively. And intensity wise, he sets the tone for this team. So the fact that they haven't had him now, they're really missing his presence. And, you know, they need to figure out something, because right now Steve Kerr is being outcoached.
Yeah.
And he's making some really just not good decisions as far as his lineups and as far as who's subbing in at what time. And, you know, I know you mentioned it, you know, yesterday about a certain player that we like to see out there, and he's not getting any minutes.
Yeah, that's Moses Moody. And I even asked Steve Kerr about that. I went to practice. In fact, the background you see from here, I'm actually in the Warriors beat writers workroom, which is a closed door, which I'm thankful that the writers that usually use this room allowed me to use it so we could have our podcast. So
thanks, guys.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's a nice place. You know, I got to admit, this is a nice place to do your job here. So one of the benefits of being in a new building. But yeah, I don't know what's going on with Kerr right now, because, you know, he's got a lot of experience, but he's got a lot of his critics out there, too. And a lot of them are saying, you know, why are you playing a guy like Corey Joseph over Moses Moody? And why isn't Moses Moody playing more minutes? I mean, why is he, you know, I asked that question, of course, you know, Kerr gave me this kind of, I don't know, like, again, maybe PC answer about he's trying to find different guys. And, you know, he's always happy to use Moses when he can. And right now it's just not fitting into his plans. And that's, I don't know why. Well, why isn't he fitting into your plans? I mean, he should be out there more. Every time he plays and he plays significant minutes, the Warriors usually have good results. That's got to frustrate Moses a lot. And he's a good guy. I've talked to him a few times. And yeah, this team does not have an identity. And then we talked to Gary Payton. GP2 comes in and he says that he admits that the team's not playing for each other. They're playing for themselves.
We know what we got to do. We know what it takes within the locker room to do what we got to do to, you know, win games and make it easier for ourselves to put ourselves in positions to win games. And we just got to get back to that. You know, get back to playing for one another, you know, and get back to, you know, having our trust, you know, on both sides of the ball.
And you can see that, like you said, Marco, you know, the game that you were at, for sure, the game against Miami, they were as flat as a next day old Pepsi, you know. So, I'm perplexed. I mean, I you know, these guys better turn around. They got five games left on this homestand, starting with Orlando on Tuesday. And I asked Trace Jackson Davis if it's not a must win, but a nice to have win type of game. And he agreed. Yeah, it's a game these guys really should win. I mean, there's no such thing as a must win game until you're facing elimination. But you know, you don't want to see a three-game losing streak develop into a 4, 5, or 6-game losing streak.
When you look at how you guys have played so far in the last couple of games, I know it was better against Dallas, but you see the game coming up tomorrow against the Magic. I don't want to say must win, but would you say it's a nice-to-win type of game that you guys are looking at scenario-wise?
Oh, absolutely. We need to get out of this funk that we're in. Orlando's got a great team. They're long and athletic, and we're going to have to be on point on defense, on the defensive end of the floor. And so we just got to keep listening to the coach and what he's saying, and keep grinding it out on the defensive end.
Exactly. And, you know, they're 15-17 right now, 11th place in the conference, on the outside looking in as far as, you know, the playoffs, things, the brackets, all that go. And it's really still way too early to even talk playoffs right now. But, you know, the bad habits that they're getting into and that they're doing right now, especially with these turnovers, you know, they have to correct that ship. And they got to be able to, like, win these – winnable games, as you call them, against teams like Orlando and, you know, teams that are, I really believe, are inferior to them talent wise. Right. And
yeah, so, yeah,
you know, the fact that I, you know, I even asked Kerr, you know, Thursday before the game, I said, you know, are you guys, you know, sort of satisfied that you're at 500 at that point or not? And, you know, he was, because I said, well, you know, with all the injuries and the suspensions and everything that's kind of been going on, you know, were you kind of like not satisfied, but just kind of like happy that you were 500 and not worse, really, was the intention of my question. And he was like, well, no, we're not satisfied. You know, we're not happy with where we're at. We should be better. And he's like, you know, we blew a couple games and, you know, there was one game we won we shouldn't have. And then I was like, okay, well, like, okay. And it's like, well, if you're not satisfied, what are you doing to improve it, to get better? I haven't seen that yet with him.
Right.
You know, again, he's mixing lines. He's putting in the rookies like Bajemski, who, you know, has a lot of energy, but he's raw, you know, and he creates turnovers because he gets a little too out of control with the ball sometimes. And, you know, I think you need more experienced guys in there. And, you know, Clay, hopefully he comes out of it. There's games where he looks like the old Clay, and then there's games where he just can't make a three, and he's just chucking threes to chuck them. Yeah. And that's one thing I noticed too, like when they get the ball, instead of doing the ball movement that they're known for and the 30 assists a game, they're just chucking up threes and they're not making them. I mean, at one point, I think there was like 25%. I think on Saturday's game, or maybe it was Thursday's game that I was at, but either way, they were shooting the ball very, very poorly these past couple of games. And they've gotten away from the whole ball movement offense that they're known for. And that's another thing where they missed Draymond Green, because he can be the catalyst of that. And set guys up and get, you know, Curry running around in the mismatches. But without that hit there, you know, Chris Paul, to me, so far, hasn't been the guy that can facilitate this offense for them when he comes in off the bench, when he started. It just seems like they're not on the same page yet. And, you know, how long that's going to take, we'll see. But, you know, they got to, you know, 5 games left in this homestand, like you said, to really try to turn things around and get back on the winning track here.
Well, I think it's embarrassing the fact that you're almost halfway into the season and you still can't figure out your team yet. I mean, like, you know, I asked this to Kerr in the practice also. I mean, I guess for lack of a better word, a shit stirrer, but, you know, it's like come on, what are you guys doing here? Why is it taking this long? Why aren't you guys figuring this out by now?
Do you find that kind of puzzling in a way that it's taken this long? You're into a new year and you're still trying to figure out your team's identity and whose roles are what?
I expected for this to be a really good team, and I still think we can be a good team. I think there have been a lot of circumstances that have led us to this point, and they are what they are. And what I've learned as a coach is every year is different. Every year you get hit with surprises, and whether it's an injury, a suspension, whatever it is, you know, absences like Wiggs last year, stuff just happens. And the whole point of coaching is to help guide the group through that, and that's what my staff and I are trying to do now.
You know, that's what preseason's for. You got a roster of veterans. Chris Paul is a good player, but I think sometimes he tends to get too involved in the hero ball, especially when he's shooting threes. I mean, Chris Paul is not a guy who should be shooting threes, but he does it anyway.
Right.
I asked him this twice, and he said that we once had a game where he was like, "Oh, 27 from three." He doesn't care. He wants to keep shooting. But come on, man, your main talent is distributing the basketball, so pass the ball.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do find this team to be an enigma, and I just think again you're too far along in the season to be trying to set rotations to figure guys playing time out, and it does make it tough when you have some young players like a Trayce Jackson Davis. Pajemski's actually become a guy who's really getting a lot more minutes, and Kuminga's playing a lot more. But again, Moody's not playing much, and he's having to fight time with Corey Joseph, and I just don't think. I've not been impressed by what I've seen out of Corey Joseph. So I don't know. All I know is the Warriors just better figure this out soon.
Yeah, I agree. Because if not, you know, they won't have any playoffs to speak of by the time April comes around. So, yeah, we'll see what they do. Let's hope, again, they can turn this around. But, yeah, 15-17 at this point, I don't think anyone expected them to be under 500 right now, despite what's happened with Draymond Green and all that stuff. Yeah, again, all that things that he's done to get himself suspended. But, you know, the fact that other guys aren't stepping up, and he even throw Andrew Wiggins in there at one point, right? So
yeah.
We'll see what happens. But it is going to be interesting to see what happens going forward these final couple months. And the Warriors, again, Steve Kerr, they got to figure something out. And maybe they improve their team at the deadline. We'll see. That'll be interesting. Very interesting trade deadline coming up for the Golden State Warriors.
5 seconds to go on New Year's Eve. And the Avalanche will skate out with a 3-1 win over the San Jose Sharks. It wasn't pretty. It was late, but it was effective.
Yeah, and closing on this note, Marco, we'll give a few minutes to the San Jose Sharks. And, you know, yesterday being Dan Rusnowski's 63rd birthday, happy birthday to Dan. And we, of course, enjoyed the interview we did with him. And I'll just say real quickly, you know, it's been a disaster watching the Sharks. They've been a complete embarrassment. I had a chance to watch the Winter Classic, which was held in Seattle this year. And the Sharks will never get that game if they keep playing the way they've been playing. I mean, you know, the way I see it, even though now the whole popularity with outdoor games has kind of diminished a little bit, it got kind of crazy. Remember the NHL at one point was having like three of those a year?
Oh, yeah.
I remember and including our game that we went to, you and me. Yeah. Went to the game against the LA Kings, which they lost 3-2 at Levi's Stadium. But they got a ton of people to go to Levi's.
Yeah.
The better place, in my opinion, is I wish they would figure out a way to get their act together and have the Giants ballpark hosted, because that's perfect. That's what they did in Seattle. They didn't use the football field. They used the baseball stadium. And I think baseball stadiums for hockey make for a nice outdoor venue.
I agree. And I would love to see, you know, whether it's a Winter Classic at Oracle Park or, you know, a game where it's set in February, a stadium series game would be awesome. But, you know, again, with the San Jose Sharks, look, it's a rebuild process. This rebuild's going to take a while. They don't have a lot of money with the whole salary cap, so they can't go out and spend freely like some other teams can. So this is Mike Greer's project, and we got to give him a little patience on this. I got to give him a chance to see what he can do. He's been trying to improve this team throughout the season by getting trades here and there with Colin and Stanika. You know, so far it hasn't really worked out. But again, you know, when you only have like Tomas Hertl as your main scorer, and you know, William Eklund got off to a good start, but he's kind of tailed off a little bit. This is going to be a season where, yeah, they're going to finish toward the near the bottom of the standings, and hopefully this time they get the number one pick in the draft lottery and get Celebrini, who's having a great junior Canadian junior championships with Team Canada, who's playing well for them right now. I expect them to be in the championship game with the USA. And a lot of people are rejecting him to be the number one pick. And of course, you know, there's a local, you know, thing to him where, you know, his dad is the head trainer of the Golden State Warriors. And I think he was a junior Shark at one point. So it'd be great to see him come up there and say it's 2-3 years from now, have him with Will Smith and Philip Bystedt as one power line that could get the Sharks back to being contenders. So just got to be patient, Sharks fans. That's all I can say. And it's going to be another long season with that team.
Yeah, and for all the naysayers are saying that how, like, you know, Connor Bedard would turn the franchise around for the Chicago Blackhawks. Hey, right now they're only 3 points ahead of the Sharks in the standings. Okay, exactly. So that things are not happening overnight. And the Ducks aren't doing much better. They're 2 points ahead of the Blackhawks. So right now the Sharks and the Ducks are only separated by 5 points in the standings. So as bad as the Sharks have played, and they played really bad, it goes to show you even a next level talent like a Connor Bedard is not going to turn your franchise around overnight.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was trying to like tell people last year when they were like, well, I want the Sharks to tank because they can get Connor Bedard. But I'm like, he's not going to turn that franchise around. You got to, you know, give him support and help with other players in order for the team to be successful. And then, yeah, as he gets, you still have Chicago going through their rebuild, even with a guy like him. So, like I said, you know, once these kids mature, a lot of them are 18, 19 years old, you know, still. So give them a chance to get some experience with their either the junior or the college teams. And then when they feel like they're ready, they'll make their splash with the Sharks and hopefully 2025, 2026. We'll see. But until then, you just got to deal with it and, you know, just go to a game and enjoy yourself at the game. You know,
right. I'll say this much. I won't talk about personal New Year's resolutions, but I think you and I can both agree that our New Year's resolution will be that we'll try to provide more coverage for Bay Area Sports Wrap.
For sure. We're going to be doing more of these podcasts for you guys and putting more post-game videos up because we love it that you guys, you know, check out our coverage and we enjoy every one of you guys. So continue to be there. We're going to be a lot there giving you guys more stuff to read and watch in this coming year in 2024.
Yeah, and lastly, let's be honest. I enjoy doing this stuff. This is fun. You know, we get a chance to do stuff that people would kill to do what we're doing, you know? And so we don't take that for granted. And I'm very thankful to the different organizations that you know, that have credentialed us. And, you know, we want to pay it back in kind.
Yeah, exactly. So, once again, happy birthday, Dan Rusinowski, one of the best in the biz, total class act. And, yeah, this is a great way to wrap it up here. I'm Barry Sports Rep for Ryan Leung. I've been Mark Utalovich. Stay tuned. We'll be doing more stuff for you here in 2024.
Live long and prosper.
Goodbye.